in two different ways. Okay, we're starting. Oh, welcome to Recover Girl, a podcast all about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Anna David. I am shooting. I am recording my first episode outside.
It's amazing.
It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful out here.
And my guest, what's wonderful is I said, is your name pronounced? And I named two pronunciations and both were wrong.
My name is Syra. Mm-hmm. And I'm with Anna David, and we are outside.
Yeah, and so we'll spell it. It's S-I-R-A-H. And You can see why I was confused.
It's very confusing. Also, because the wine, Petite Syrah, so that just, like, ruins.
What's that?
I don't know, because I never drank wine.
Right.
Because I was very, like, classy. I had, like, maybe a box of wine strapped to my head. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
But so, yeah, I was very high class. But apparently it's a wine.
So I didn't know.
And it's tiny. I don't know.
Okay, so a Petite Syrah.
Yes.
I mean, sorry, who's going around talking about Petite Syrah? No offense.
Some
listeners.
People tag me, though. Some people tag me with the wine conversation.
Oh,
and I'm like,
God.
People talk about this?
You.
They don't realize. Well. They don't know.
So, but your given name was Syrah.
Yes.
And tell me, so, okay, let's get into the whole thing. What I was just explaining to you was that I first became aware of you because I was at the Unite to Face Addiction event in not last fall, but the fall before, correct? Mm-hmm. I was just having fun. I wasn't, not that listening to lectures isn't fun, but I wasn't attending any events.
Well.
I wander into this auditorium.
So random, too.
So
because
random.
The people that were in there, like, it was great, but it was, like, off the beaten path, like, very strange. I honestly didn't really know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I think I pulled it off. Like, I was like, I know. I got this.
Well, I was like, who is this girl? She's far hipper and more articulate than what seems to be happening in this room.
That's why I was also wearing sweatpants. Can we talk about that?
I didn't notice that.
Everyone was wearing suits. I didn't know. And so I'm like out there with like all these very important people wearing my sweatpants.
So how did that come about? They just reached out to you, Greg
someone,
Williams?
Yeah, someone, it wasn't Greg. It was someone reached out to me and they were like, we want you to be kind of like the edgy person. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I got that.
Yeah.
I'll bring the sweats.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
And so they just said, you're going to get to tell your story.
Yeah. So they flew me out. They put me up in a hotel, but I still didn't get any kind of like briefing.
Right.
I missed like the dinners.
Did you go to the concert?
I went to the concert.
Right.
Yes. That was incredible.
And okay, so let's go into your story. I purposely do this thing where I don't look into anyone's story.
I love that.
I don't want to be like influenced at all. So, and I remember snippets, let's say very dramatic snippets from your talk in DC.
Yes.
But let's tell people who don't know anything. You were born here in LA, right?
No, I'm from New York.
Okay, from New
York. I'm excited about this. This is exciting.
Wait,
like,
which
not
part?
Well, just to know nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, other than very dramatic, heavy things, which.
Like, from 2 years ago.
Yeah. That's why it's amazing. I'm like, you know, the darkest parts of my life.
Yeah, but only the dark. And then I recently met this friend of yours, Syrah. I think I could say her last name. I was at a dinner party and I said
which
to
Syrah.
I don't know. She listens.
Okay.
I don't know if she seems like she'd be totally cool with being outed. Anyway, I'm at a dinner party and I literally say, hey, is there cheese in this? And this girl goes, I know your voice. And I go, that's weird. And she goes, I'm sober. And I go, well, I have a podcast. She goes, I listen.
She's like, I already know that.
Yeah. And so, we just completely bonded.
Oh, I love that.
And so just in case, hi, Syrah. But in case you don't want your last name said,
hi,
I'll tell you after.
And I'm sure I know.
I'm sure you do.
Hey.
Oh, okay.
Hey.
Hi.
You're doing great.
Hi.
Sorry about
this. I
think
it's my new neighbor.
Hi, new neighbor. How you doing?
Literally, hi.
Not just hanging out.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, just recording what we're doing. Hi, listener. This is unusual. So let's get into the most personal aspect of your life.
No pressure.
So, born in New York.
Yeah, I was born in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with my mom partially. My parents were both, they met in recovery.
Not in rehab, but
no, in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Rehab wasn't really that popular back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so they met in New York, and I ended up, I think when I was 5, I ended up going to live with my father. God bless him. Really, really charismatic man. Definitely a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up, my dad and my stepmom were like partial nudists. And I grew up, like, you know, eating off the land and eating raccoon and, like, skinning things and making hats.
So not in the city?
Uh-uh.
Upstate?
No. They ended up taking me to Washington State.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was a weird time.
Did you see that movie, that Viggo Mortensen movie?
What's the title of it? I think I watched this on the plane with the kids that live out in the thing.
Yeah.
That was my life.
Yeah.
Yes, literally.
They made it look in the movie very gratifying and wonderful.
No. It's very... Well, you know what? It was. I mean, I think I'm capable of doing, like, figuring things out more so than other people.
Right.
I don't want to brag about that, but I'm,
yeah,
you know what I mean? I'm like, give me a plier and a piece of gum and I'll make you a little tent right now.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, my dad was really like organic and living off the earth, but also shooting heroin. Mm-hmm. So the priorities were very strange.
And was it your you and your sister?
No, it was me by myself. My sister would come and visit. But yeah, there was just a lot of insanity, a lot of nudity, a little part-time nudists.
And were you going to school?
On and off, I got in a lot of trouble. Well, my parents got in a lot of trouble. The cops were constantly coming. You know, we lived in a trailer and there was good times. I think a lot of times I only harp on the bad times because there was a lot of bad. But, by the age of like 8, I had dropped out of school. I dropped out of the 4th grade to take care of my dad, while he shot dope. And that was my whole life.
And why were the cops coming?
I think probably my mom was concerned because I was, you know, there was a lot of things happening that were not okay. I wasn't allowed to talk to her. There was just a lot of chaos going on.
And when they came, why do you think they didn't take you away?
I don't know. I learned from a very young age that lying is crucial to survival. So, you know, I didn't want my dad to be in trouble. So I would do everything in my power to
protect him. And your stepmom was there?
Yes.
Also strung out?
Nope.
Just enabling.
Yeah, I'm confused about all that. And she was also in recovery. So there's a lot of confusion there still.
Are they still together?
No, my father died. So she left. She actually ended up leaving. So it was just me and him.
Mm-hmm. For how long?
I'm not really sure, but I believe like... a year and a half maybe. Okay. And so I would just have to go, like, you know, we'd have to go to the pawn shop and sell stuff, and then I would go walk for miles selling peppermint patties.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I knowing you for 10 minutes, I feel like you were an amazing salesman.
Oh, I was incredible. I was selling rare coins by the age of like 8 because my dad was so strung out and he used to sell rare coins, and they had this sheet. So I'd call people and be like, hey Bob, do you want to work the rest of your life or do you want to retire early?
You did it over the phone.
Yeah, it was insane.
Well, because you have this just angelic little face. And what's interesting, you, because you have lived, you know, you clearly had to become an adult as a kid. But you there's something about you that is like very childlike.
I've gotten younger the older I get.
That's
like
so
much younger.
Now, so you were selling stuff. He was pawning stuff. And then how did you get out of there?
I think the cops ended up coming the last time, but it was all kind of like convoluted. But they ended up coming. I went back to New York with my mom. I had dirty hair, dirty fingernails, and I had been left alone. So my first course of escape was books. I would just read and read because I didn't have TV, because that's bad for you.
Right.
You know what
Heroin's
I mean?
Fine.
Yeah. It's where we draw the line.
Yeah.
So I would just read and read and read. And by the time I went to Queens, New York, I was completely, I remember just like, I have this weird memory. I was in between 10 and whatever. And I remember being on like the 6th story of this apartment in Queens and thinking like I could just jump out of this window. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like very bizarre thoughts for like a 10-year-old. But I just remember really wanting to be out of my body.
Yeah. I mean, not bizarre given what you had been through.
Right.
And your mom was sober?
Yes.
And so that was a healthy life that you got into?
You know, I think that what I've realized in retrospect is that my parents did the best that they could, but nobody came from, you know, if crazy is the only language you speak, it takes a very long time, regardless of being in recovery or not, to learn a new language.
Right.
And so there was a lot of just chaos. I think, you know, probably my relationship with everyone has gotten better in the past 5 years, and right. I have 12 years clean.
Wow. And do you have other siblings besides your sister?
No, just my sister.
And so then, and were you always musically inclined?
Oh my God. No, not at all. No, I was in I didn't have any like talents as a kid. Do you know what I mean? Like I would like write journals my whole life.
But you were verbal because you were reading.
Yes. And I started journaling at like 7.
Right, right.
I always thought I was supposed to be like an author.
Do you still have those journals?
Yes, I have all of them. It's insane.
Wow. So you really documented a lot of what happened that you might not otherwise remember.
Yes.
That's really interesting.
Absolutely.
Are you working on a memoir?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Well, I was working on a memoir, but actually now it's more focused on just short stories and like what the lesson is as opposed to going all the way in.
Are you scared to go all the way in?
No, I'm not. I think it's just more about like making it palatable for other people right now. And then you have something to build towards, if that makes sense.
Okay, I'm going to tell you unsolicited
yeah,
advice.
Please, because you're amazing.
We might be in love.
Yeah, I know we are. This is magical, by the way. Best date I've ever been on.
I know. Well, it really is like a gorgeous day. I know there's plenty of gorgeous days in LA, but we're sitting in my backyard. No, if you ignore the trash thing right there.
Well, we wouldn't have met your wonderful new neighbor, though.
That's so weird. I mean, no one ever moves in here.
Alarm.
I think he's right in there. We love you. Okay. So when I was first planning to write a book,
mm-hmm.
I reached out to an agent. And I said to him, so I'm going to do a book of short stories. Like Sex and the City had just come out before
amazing,
the TV show.
Yes.
And I'm going to do a book of essays kind of like that. And he said, every first-time author thinks they can sell a book of essays. You could, but hold on. They're really hard to sell. And the only reason that they do it is that they're scared to write their book. Now, I started a coaching program. I'm now coaching 12 people in this. Oh, anybody interested? Email me. Version ends in August. But 6 of them at least came to me starting and said, oh, I'm going to write a book of short stories or essays. And I told them what that agent told me. And now everyone's working on a book.
See, here's the thing, though. I was like, I'm going to write a memoir. And literally everyone was like, don't.
Who?
Well, a few people. I don't want to shout them out. But there's a few people that are doing very
well.
Very well. Very well. And they said, here's the thing is like, I think that that's something that you should work towards because it is so heavy in terms of. Because I'm ready to go all the way in. I have no attachment to my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I mean, they're successful authors and they're telling you that?
Yes.
That is bizarre to me.
I think what it is because I've done life coaching for the past 9 years. Mm-hmm. And because I've also been doing motivational speaking for a very long time. It's more about just the introduction of stories. Because my short stories would still be like a memoir. Because I have such beautifully... dysfunctional stories
that are
real, like just poetic, you know.
But still, I say the more shocking and dark, the better.
Oh, even with this though, it's very shocking and very dark.
Okay.
Yes, that's the good news. There's no way to escape the shockingly dark things
that
have happened.
Yeah. So okay.
But I'm totally open because obviously you know what you're talking about.
But I hear that and I you know okay and so yeah and so I will tell you one thing is that I went around repeating that for years, and then I said that to somebody who went ahead with a book of essays and then sold it for a fortune, and I was like, well, I'm clearly wrong, but then she didn't earn out her advance, so she never got another book deal. I don't really know. I only know my experience.
Well, you know what? I might self-publish anyway, though, because I met with a bunch of people and you can get a huge, the place I'm at in my life, I can get a very large advance, but I don't even know if I want to go that way.
I would.
I know. That's what a lot of people are saying. But there's some other things in the works that are happening that could, I don't know. It's very strange, but here's the good news is I don't actually have to figure anything out.
No.
Which is cool.
I mean, my only thing is that I will say, if I have a bit of unsolicited advice.
I love
You could clearly sell a lot of books if you self-published, and you could probably make more money
mm-hmm.
if that's what you want. But if you want more legitimacy.
Access, yeah.
Then why not go
traditional? Well, also, like, being in Barnes & Noble. I just put that cat hair on my mouth.
Oh, yeah.
But being in, like, Barnes & Noble is, like,
you
a life goal.
You can self-publish and get in those stores. But still, it's a little more.
Who do you have to sleep with
to
get
the no
one?
I know how to do it. Again, wisdom I share with my coaching clients, no sex involved unless you want to.
Well, yeah, I mean.
So you were not musically inclined.
No. I listened to a lot of music and I wrote all my feelings, but I was, you know, my father played every instrument in the world. He was like a savant. I was totally incapable. And I wasn't really good at anything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And music was not in my, that wasn't something that I was going to be when I grew up.
Right. And so what happened? What happened after you moved to your mom's? Then what?
I started using drugs. Thank God. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was like, finally, I'm out of this body. Huh.
How old were you?
11, 12. Mm-hmm. I was terrible at using drugs, though. That's the only thing.
What drugs were you using?
Just smoking weed and drinking. But I was like always a blackout drinker mm-hmm. from literally the first time I drank, mm-hmm. I was out. And so I would just proceeded to get arrested. And I think I like thrived off someone seeing me. Mm-hmm. Like I felt so unseen. Mm-hmm. That getting arrested felt like someone knew that I was alive.
And you would go to jail for the night?
No, they would always end up, because the cool thing about New York is like every, you know, you always got a guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I always had a guy.
Yeah.
And one of my friend's fathers was like this man named Andy. He basically like took me under his wing and he was a cop. And he's like one of the most incredible people I've ever met. But he would generally get me out of trouble. Mm-hmm.
And so then when did you graduate to harder drugs?
I think it was, well, I was doing weird things. Basically, I think when I was like 15, I was doing drugs. I was popping pills. I was doing whatever. But my things got really advanced. My mom had moved to Los Angeles to be with her boyfriend. And foster care came to New York. And they were like, we're going to put you in or you can move to L.A. So I moved to L.A. and immediately just went to hell in a handbasket. There was like no, I 2 months out here, I ended up getting kidnapped and held by three men and brutally.
How did that happen?
It was a whole thing. Basically, they took me from a park and.
You were like fucked up?
No.
It's just the middle of the day you were in a park?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were how old?
15. 16.
And so do you like, have you repressed any of it? Do you remember it all?
No, I remember most of it. I mean, I have the gift of trauma is really, really miraculous because which people are listening, they're like, why?
Well, people listening get it,
but it is a beautiful thing because you can separate from your body without
drugs.
right. But yeah, it was a whole thing that got me there. But basically they took me to an abandoned building and proceeded to, you know, take my virginity. And so is that too harsh?
Not at all.
And so I remember a lot of it, but there was a lot of just like flying out the window.
Yeah. I mean, so disassociation is a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
I have a question for you about that. Have you had therapists and people go to you? So you say, I'm sad, I'm angry, whatever. And they go, where do you feel that in your body? Have you had people
absolutely,
say that?
Absolutely, yeah.
And do you know?
Yes.
Have you always had that?
Yes. Because I can always, I mean, I didn't always know that because I was so detached from my body. But through years of doing work, even now, like, you know, we talked about this. There was some traumatic stuff that's happened the past 2 weeks. Different trauma, just death and life. But it's, I can feel it in different parts and I go get massages to release it because there's some things that I can't work through because I'm holding it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I always, my experience with that, I have some disassociation tendencies too, or I grew up doing that, you know, and I've had people ask me, like therapists and meditation teachers, and mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know what you mean, where do I feel it in my body? I feel it in my brain. And it's been something I've been really working on. And it's just like literally last week I went to therapy and I was like, oh my God, I was watching the movie Lion. Did you see it?
No, is it amazing?
It's just amazing. And the kid got like lost in the train at a station. It's like so upsetting. And I felt terror and it felt it in the you front can, of my legs.
Yep.
And I was like, went to therapy. I was like, I felt terror.
I felt it in my legs.
Because it's a really, a lot of people who have no issues and no trauma just automatically feel, they just know.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also interesting, too, because I hold on to it in different places. And, you know, even, I mean, this is many years ago now, but I got an autoimmune disease. And they were like, we don't know what it is. And what, and I was just like, this is my life. You know, like everything is a manifest for me and what I believe. And I don't mean across the board because I can't speak for everyone. But for me, illness or pain is a manifestation.
Yeah. Of repressed emotions and things like that. I know.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. But I mean, we're not doctors.
No, and I'm not telling everyone that it means, like, you know, because you were.
You did something wrong.
Yeah. Like.
Sick. Yeah. Yeah. I know.
For me, it definitely is.
Yeah. Do you think your cat allergy is part of that?
Yes, probably.
Really?
I don't know. I think also my genetics are strong, though, for certain things.
Right.
We got Zyrtec on lock. We should have put stock in it. You know what I mean?
Is that worse than the alcoholism that you have on lock?
it's part for the course there. I'm like, well, 50-50.
So, okay. And so that happens shortly after you get here.
Yes.
And then what?
And then that was the end. That was the end of me. I was so, you know, I ended up, you know, doing crystal meth, selling drugs, smoking heroin, selling guns, running guns.
How did you just found these people?
I find those people very easily. I mean, I still do. I make gangster rap music. I'm still still with my people. But yeah, I just lost my mind. I became a gangbanger, and that's how I got my name, Syra.
Okay. How, like, one day someone's like...
Well, we were, like, tagging. We were fighting the revolution. The man was holding us down. Reptilian empire. It's a lot. But so I was... My real name is S-A-R-A, and I was like, they'll never figure this out.
Right.
So Syra, S-I-R-A-H. Very different.
It bizarrely is.
It is. Well, also, it bothered me the way people said, like, the name Sarah. They say Sarah.
Oh,
so, weirdly, Syra sounds more like an East Coast Sarah.
So interesting. I have a thing with my name. People will say, Anna over Anna.
Wait, is it?
It's Anna.
Oh, thank God.
You
said
it right.
Yeah, okay.
And then people go, Anna. Like, they imitate me saying it. Not a lot of people. Annoying people, frankly.
Yeah, I don't like that.
But when I lived in England, and I loved the way they said it, which was Anna.
Anna. Oh, I like that.
It's not Anna or Anna.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Anna.
So you're hanging out with these people.
Yes.
And were you talking about what had happened to you?
No.
Told nobody?
No, I don't.
Not your mom?
Oh, no, she knew, but I didn't talk about anything. I didn't process anything.
Right.
At all.
And so doing drugs, it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Well, I was living with Inglewood. I was living with 12 men in Inglewood, writing my fake name on other people's walls. I dropped out of high school 6 times. I was afraid of windows and doors. So I had to, like, sleep with weapons and, like, be situated in the perfect place.
Because you were high, because it was meth?
Yeah, but it wasn't even that. It was just my PTSD was, like, very particular.
Did they have weapons, those guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but the guys you were living with were okay.
Oh, yeah, they were great. I mean, you know, I don't want to say they were great. You know, a lot of them are dead now.
Yeah.
A lot of people, like... A lot of my I had a type, like, all my ex-boyfriends got shot in the head.
Right.
My friend got stabbed on my porch. The FBI kicked the door down, like, at my house. And there was just a lot of chaos. And the truth was, the only time I felt safe was when chaos was happening.
Right.
You know, so I managed to create a lot of chaos. But those kids were just a reflection of what I believed.
But they weren't violent. They
didn't, I've never been in that situation.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
Yeah. I mean, but it's interesting because chaos is a great distraction from feelings.
Yes. And it made me feel whole.
Yeah.
Made me feel seen again.
Yeah. So, and then?
And then what happened, my granny came from Florida. My granny's also in recovery. And my granny, I love my granny, but my granny 12 steps like everything, like plants, people, you know, like she is like all about it. And so my mom came and found me in Inglewood and said, you know, I don't want your granny to know you're a drug addict, but you should see her. So I would stay at the house and every morning she would get me a plate of food and I would scrape it off into my dresser drawer. And for some reason... All the insane things that had happened never connected to me. But in that moment, when she would look at me and be able to say nothing, I had this, like, spiritual awakening that...
Your grandmother or your mother looking at you?
My grandmother. Mm-hmm. She didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. She didn't 12-step anything. Mm-hmm. There was nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
She just looked at me and, you know, I could see that pain that I had caused.
Right.
And for some reason, that moment was enough for me.
How old were you?
17.
And so then what happened?
So then I started going to, I don't know how candid, and I keep forgetting like what the
yeah,
thing
I
is.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I try to sort of get people to shy away from it if they want to. I don't stop anybody.
I mean, obviously,
saying,
like, yeah. I'm in a cult, you know yeah. what I mean? No. Yeah.
You know, apparently saying 12 step is okay, but
12 step
AA?
Is okay, but you can't identify where you go. That's like the rules. So I started going to
meetings
and I met the God of my understanding there.
Right.
And he was wearing a fitted hat and a backpack, and he knew about the revolution. And I was like,
oh, it was literally a person.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so he was your higher power.
Yeah.
He's got the hat.
Yeah, he saved my life.
And who is he?
He is serving life in prison. Uh-huh. He relapsed at 3 years. Uh-huh. And he went out and killed a woman with a tire iron.
And so that was your boyfriend?
Yeah, we were in love for like a very long 2 weeks.
Right. Like your first 2 weeks of sobriety?
Yeah. He gave me a hope chip, though.
Right.
A literal one. We're not.
Right.
No metaphors here.
Did you stay sober from that first meeting?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I got clean on the streets. So I was homeless on and off for my first 2 years. And I ended up getting, I would sleep at the train station. I would take the bus to meetings, walk to meetings. I heard things that weren't there. I saw things that weren't there. My ears were bleeding. They thought I would never get my hearing back. I was insane.
What do ears bleed from?
Because I was snorting things.
Yeah.
And so my ears were bleeding from the membrane, I guess, because it was all going into.
But not your nose.
No, my nose was completely.
You're like that. We don't even need
that thing.
That
we don't.
and you were not staying with your mom.
No.
And so then life got slowly better.
Not
for
me.
A couple years.
Not for me. I mean, the people are always like, "Why did you hold?" You know, I got an apartment. It was a garage in East LA, mm-hmm. and it would like when it would rain, the doors would like swell shut, and I couldn't get out. Like it didn't really get better. And I hate to say that because people, I think sometimes we lie to people though when they're trying.
Right.
And we're like, oh, it's going to be great. It's like, no, it's going to be life.
Yeah. I mean, my life got like monumentally better my first year and then it dipped.
It dwindles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And some people, it depends on where you come in at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? My where I came in at was far lower than where most people come in at. But I also think there's a certain level of, like, I ruined my life.
Right.
And I had to deal with the consequences of that. And that's not fun. But the good news is, once you deal with all that, then it gets monumentally better.
So how long did that take?
It took me a long time.
Today? You feel better?
yeah. No, I would say after, like, 2 years. But also at 2 years, you know, I had been working on myself and focusing on self. And I was still living in this garage and still, you know, living in just total, I mean, poverty, consciousness, like, all of these things. And at 2 years, my mom for Christmas got me this, like, 3-day seminar thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is a cult.
What's it called?
Landmark Forum.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the third day, they were going to, like, tell me the meaning to life. And I was like, oh, my God, they're going to commit mass suicide in tracksuits. This is actually a great gift.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Wow, yeah.
Like, I was like, this is amazing. So the first day, I learned nothing. Second day, I learned nothing because I know everything.
Yeah.
Third day, it was basically, like, changed my whole life. Like, it was just, you know, there's things where I learn and I hear and at a certain moment in a certain place with a certain person, I get it finally.
Totally.
And that's kind of like been my journey. And so I realized that I had to make a decision between being sick and well, and that I couldn't do both at the same time.
Right.
So I couldn't be a victim and be successful. I couldn't be abused and be in a healthy relationship.
But you were, apologies for the plane going overhead.
It's the government. No, I'm kidding.
They're after you.
Yeah, I know.
But you were getting better. I mean, just the fact that you were staying sober. So you had some positivity fueling you.
Yes. But I know, I mean, yes. In the bigger picture, yes. But in the moment, no, I felt totally, I mean, it took me a long time. And the reason I say that, and and not like harp on it, but I just think it's important is because sometimes people come in and they're like so excited and happy, joyous and riding clouds and unicorns, right, and they get the job and the boyfriend and the car and the house. And
right,
some people don't.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just important for the people that don't to know that eventually,
yeah,
it changes, but it doesn't, because a lot of people are like, I didn't get it yet.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely, like, that's okay. It took me a long time, but I'm the only one that's still here.
Right.
So
right,
there's something to be said about that.
You mean all the people you got sober with?
Yes.
Or not?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of, you know, happens on God's time.
Yeah, completely.
And, you know, it's like, I have a psychic and, you know, she'll tell me things and they don't happen at that time period. And she's like, well, spirits don't know time.
Right. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Time is an illusion, unfortunately.
So, okay. And so then after the forum.
Yeah. So then from that moment forward, I didn't, I made a decision. I didn't realize that I had been living my whole life based upon things that had happened 10 years prior. Mm-hmm. So I defined all of my self-worth based upon a moment that I then perpetuated into my life every single day.
Right.
So I made decisions on the belief that I was broken.
Right.
And then perpetuated that and then got to feel bad for myself.
Right. Right.
And that whole pattern, I put it down. And so I made a decision, like, if I could really be something other than a high school dropout, drug addict, what would I be if I could just let that go? And so, you know, I made a decision to, I had already started making music. I was really bad at it. And honestly, I thought I was schizophrenic and that's why I was making music. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I woke up one day at like a year clean and I heard this voice that was like, you're going to be a rapper. And I was like, oh my God, I'm crazy.
Right.
And I followed it and I just followed it.
How'd you learn?
I failed. I would go to this open mic, Lamarck Park, mm-hmm, Thursday nights, and I would go and I would get booed off stage. And I mean, I was awful. Mm-hmm. I was really bad. And so I'd go every week and I'd get booed off and I was the only girl and like the only white person. And they were like, what is wrong with you?
Right.
And I think because they felt bad for me or concerned, they like took me under their wing and taught me how to rap and made me jump rope. And, you know, so I mean, I just failed enough to succeed.
And then when did that, you know,
change?
Yeah, well, and when did that like blossom into worldly success? So you're doing those battles.
Took me a long time.
And then what happened?
Well, I started getting like recognized by people. So I would like open up for Wu-Tang and Talib Kweli and all this stuff. But I was still not really, I mean, I was with this label, Broken Complex, and they were incredible. And we were like booking these tours, like sleeping at fans' houses and doing this whole thing. And I can't believe I stayed clean through all of it. You know, it was just like,
yeah,
day in, day out, day in, day out. But I would say that it depends on how you define success.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm trying to remember, but basically I went on Warped Tour, mm-hmm, in 2008 because, mm-hmm, Katy Perry was just barely getting off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I had like another revelation where I was like, I don't want to make underground hip hop because everyone is mad and I want to make music that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so that like changed the trajectory. And then I think a few years after that, I signed a publishing deal.
Mm-hmm.
I was about to quit music because I was broke and I was sad. And I was like, this doesn't feel like spiritual because I keep failing, mm-hmm, and it's been years. And so, yeah.
And then you signed a publishing
deal. I signed a publishing
deal. And then what happened?
And then I still felt like a failure. In 2007, I believe, Skrillex wrote to me. I was on tour in Romania. I booked my own tour there. And he wrote me fan mail on MySpace, mm-hmm, Sonny Moore. And I was like, who's this dude? He's like, we should work. And I was like, all right, whatever. So I went back to Queens. And my best friend, like, who I've been with forever, she was like, oh, my God, Sonny Moore is writing to you. Mm-hmm. She loves, like, screamo, like bang, like, right, sad bang hair.
Right.
And I was like, who? And she's like, that is Sonny Moore. And so I was like, all right, cool. So I like wrote back. And then when I moved back to LA after tour, I ended up living with him and like seven dudes in a loft in downtown. And we ended up recording our first song, Weekends. So that was kind of that.
Mm-hmm.
We made a bunch of other songs. And then basically one day I woke up and he was Skrillex, mm-hmm, and I was sleeping on an arrow bed.
Right. And then?
And then I had signed, oh, right before he became Skrillex, I had signed to Atlantic Records. Mm-hmm. They like flew me out to New York. It was like totally surreal. And they signed me for like a very crazy deal on mm-hmm. their part. Mm-hmm. And so these things just started to like happen. And then Skrillex became Skrillex. And then I found out that we were nominated for a Grammy.
And was that last year?
That was 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. I got like a weird, it just was such a bizarre thing. Yeah, it's taken me a long time. It was very slow.
And what is your like day-to-day like now? How much are you making music and how much are you like doing recovery? You do a lot of advocacy now.
I honestly have been like last year I spoke like motivational speaking or I was in a different city every weekend. I went to Russia. I went to Brazil. I've spoken all over the world. And I feel like, you know, it's so funny. So at the beginning of the year, I do like God boxes and mm-hmm. like whatever. And I think it was 2 years ago. I put like, I want to sell 1 million CDs and like, travel the world. Mm-hmm. Right. You have to be a little more specific.
Right.
So this past year and a half, 2 years, I've been selling a lot of CDs and traveling the world. But right. I'm like, no, I meant music, God.
Right, right. So CDs of your speaking.
Yeah, unfortunately. No. It's great. I'm hashtag blessed. But
yeah.
But well, I was like, that's not what I meant.
And then, in terms of your day-to-day life, like you still do.
I make music every day.
Uh-huh.
I kind of, like I'm saying, like things have been presenting themselves and I kind of just show up for everything.
Yeah, totally.
And I show up for recovery. I show up for advocacy. I show up for gangster rap music at 4 a.m. I get called into the studio with Skrill. You know, like I just show up.
Right.
And I don't really know how I get it all done.
And in terms of like a sort of spiritual, like, is that a part of your recovery, a spiritual?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, I didn't have any spiritual beliefs until probably 2 years into my
right.
process. But I meditate an hour a day. I do binaural meditation. It changed my life. I have a very deep connection with spirit mm-hmm. and just all things. Like, I feel very connected to my life and spirit, and I do yoga 5 days a week, working out, things like that. So I have a great meditation group on Wednesdays, you know. So I have,
you don't go to Against the Stream?
No.
Okay.
No,
that's on Wednesdays too.
I want to though. Yeah, I have a private little group, like nice. Five okay. people.
So, yeah,
it's kind of fun.
And how similar was what you were hearing in Forum that day that you heard it to like what you'd been hearing in recovery?
Oh, it was the same thing.
It was the same thing.
Yeah, it was the same thing. That's why it's always weird. Because mm-hmm. also I can, you know, go, I mean, I have learned spiritual lessons from like the dude at Vons. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah.
I have heard things from the most bizarre of places because I've just been ready to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's sort of like, I heard somebody say this morning in a meeting that, you know, he went and it was like everybody was whining. And then he went back like 3 years later and everybody's like sharing these amazing things.
Right.
And it's sort of just like, well, you hear what you hear.
Right.
Based on like where you are, based on what your preconceived notions are about it and all of that.
Well, everything is perspective too. So it's like, the way I don't even accurately see you.
Right.
I see you right. the way I choose to see you.
Right.
And you know what I mean? You're a reflection of how I feel about myself. So that's the thing is like everything, you know, the reason I learn so much quicker now is not because I'm some spiritually advanced human being, because it depends on the day.
Yeah.
But it's just the way that I feel about myself is the yeah. way that I get to view you.
And that's, you know, and that's like, you know, until I came into recovery and I started hearing like what people think of you is none of your business. Like, I didn't really understand that what people, that everything's projection. It's like that.
Yes.
The Four Agreements.
Did yeah, you, I love the Four Agreements.
I only remember one of them, which is don't take anything personal.
Yeah.
I don't remember the other.
It's so true too, though.
Yeah. Because
it's not like, I used to take everything personally and then I was like, what? Nobody yeah. even knows that. They can't see past themselves to even see me.
I know.
You know?
I know. But it's like, I relate to that not feeling seen thing.
And yeah.
So it's sort of a relief to go, oh, no one really is.
No, no one's being seen.
So how do you make sense? We have to work towards wrapping it up. Okay. And how do you make sense of what you've been through? Like, why? You know, why would you have to go through that?
Oh, because you know what? I think, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to get too heady, but I really believe that before I came to this planet, I made a decision to learn certain lessons. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is you either learn the lessons or you don't. You know, like, I've had a lot of friends. My best friend died a few years. Like, there's some people who are just not ready to accept the lessons. But for me, I was ready this time. Mm-hmm. And so that's why all of this happened, was so that I could, you know, it's like, taking all that pain and all that, you know, there's, I mean, we didn't even get into half the darkness, mm-hmm. but taking all that pain and all those experiences and being able to go help someone else escape whatever their belief system is why it happened.
Right. Right.
Otherwise there's no point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, so it's sort of like you believe your soul needed to.
Yes.
For whatever reason, to be somebody who could share it with other people.
Absolutely. And to transcend that. And I think everyone's got that calling in them, regardless of what their story is, because it's all just a story to get you to wherever you're supposed to be.
Right.
And so I'm so grateful all those things happen.
Wow, really?
Yeah. It is so weird.
Yeah.
But I really feel that. I mean, like, because I have been in the most miraculous places as a result of having such a terrible terrible life or whatever. Like, I got to go to Utah to do this spiritual camp out and like bury this woman's son's ashes in the middle of the do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, well, I don't know.
No, I mean, but
I mean, I know what you mean.
Like, all my traumatized whatever got me to that moment to be able to like be present for something like that. Like, yeah. And also, who wants to get out unscathed? Like, what did you get out of that experience? What, you got, like, a mediocre life?
Right.
Like,
right.
Okay. You know?
So this has been so fascinating. And
I know.
Great.
I love you. We're going to have to just do this.
I know. We'll just record it, but we won't release it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or we could do it without the tape recorder. Now, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm all over the internet, regrettably. But if you just Google, that sounds so obnoxious. Mm-hmm. If you can Google me.
But you have a site, your own site.
Not really, because my site like sucks right now.
Okay.
But if you just Google,
if
you Google SIRAH.
They're not going to find anybody else.
No, you're going to find me and maybe some wine, but just me. And I love to hear I'm good at Twitter and I'm good at Instagram.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, I'm terrible at interneting.
Okay.
But yeah, that's, I'm here.
Thank you so much. Loved it. Oh, by the way, you were just listening to Recover Girl podcast, all about addiction and recovery. If you want to find out more about Recover Girl, which I should mention is a consulting company, for addiction and recovery websites, rehabs, all of that, you can go to recovergirl.biz. If you want to get show notes and transcripts from these episodes, go to recovergirlnewsletter.com. I know.
You do that?
I do that.
That's amazing.
I mean, people do it, you know.
Someone, yeah.
Someone
does that.
Way too important to do it.
Yeah.
Slash, of course, I do it myself. No, so that's, no, I mean, yes and no. Recovergirlnewsletter.com, sign up for the newsletter, and thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.